This is the Preservation Technology Podcast, bringing innovation to preservation. The Preservation Technology Podcast is a production of the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training, a unit of the National Park Service.
Hello, my name is Jason Church. I'm the Chief of Technical Services here at the National Center of Preservation Technology and Training. And today I'm here interviewing Catherine Fowler, who's the author of Dutton's Dirty Diggers, a book that just came out about Bertha Dutton and the senior Girl Scout archaeology camps that were held in the American Southwest from 1947 to 1957. Let's talk about your book.
Several of us had met and we all felt that we owed a debt to Bertha Dutton for basically opening up the world of archaeology and generally anthropology to us, and also the possibilities that we too could go into that field and we could have successful careers, as Bert had done just that through the University of New Mexico, where she got her BA and MA degrees and then also went on to Columbia to get her PhD and was employed at the Museum of New Mexico in Santa Fe for almost all of her career. So we thought that was quite neat, and at that time, the opportunities for women to go into something other than being a secretary or a hairdresser, or if you had an inclination towards science, you could be a nurse, but never a physician. So she just really opened our eyes. And so we decided something more needed to be told about the program. In addition, of course, she introduced us to a very vibrant region of the country that most of us knew absolutely nothing about. And many became so enchanted that they even moved there or had second homes there most of their lives. So it was certainly a multicultural experience too. Bert was very well known among the Pueblo peoples and Navajo and Apache peoples, and they welcomed us, and we tried to act like ladies most of the time when we were in their presence. And of course, we visited lots of national parks, especially in the Southwest, because many of them contain very important archaeological sites that are now under protection and were then, or some were transitioning to it. So all the way around, it was a marvelous experience. Some close to 300 girls went through it, including the two-week on-the-road camps, where we traveled to various regions of the Southwest and camped out while doing so. And there were sometimes several of those per summer. And then also the archaeological excavation camp, which was held south of Santa Fe in the Galisteo Basin at a site called Pueblo Largo. And there were six of those camps. They ran 2 weeks each, but only one in the latter part of the years that she ran the program. So all around, it was wonderful. One girl came back 11 times. Several others came back two, three, four, five times. I came back twice, but then the program was ended. I was in the last 2 years of the program. As a result, quite a number of us did stick with it and became anthropologists. And also others got PhDs in related fields at a time when women could hardly expect to get much beyond a bachelor's degree. So we think that the program had a lot of very good results. There were four of us who became very close. I had started the work with a visit to the archives at the Museum of New Mexico Laboratory of Anthropology, and that paper was presented to the Society for American Archaeology at one of its meetings. About the topic of the symposium was how the public can get involved in archaeology, and I thought that fitted quite well. And while I was there, I met another person who was beginning to work on the archives, the Bertha Dutton archives, which are at the museum and the archives there. And so we kind of linked up and thought, well, we'd at least do a monograph on the material maybe. And then that next summer, through a mutual friend in archaeology, Alexander Lindsay, who was at the Museum of Northern Arizona, I met two more of the diggers. So we teamed up and decided to push forward and do what we could to tell the story. Joe Tice Bloom and I did most of the archival work. The other two pulled together some of their diaries. Suzanne Martin had Bert's little black books that had all our names in them for each adventure. And also, I suspect, a positive or negative evaluation of our behavior. And so she pulled together a roster, basically, of all the names that Bert had in her little books. And that's what added up to the nearly 300 names. Some others we heard about out. We tried to contact a few, certainly those that became anthropologists I knew of. And so they were partly involved, like Vorsila Borer, who became a botanist, but also an archaeobotanist, and others. So it was a collaborative effort on all our parts. And we certainly owed a debt of gratitude to the archivist at the Museum of Indian Arts and Cultures, Diane Bird, herself a Rio Grande Pueblo native, and she bent over backwards to provide us access to the materials and help us out whenever we needed. One summer, we had a kind of get-together with six or seven of us and looked at photographs in the collection, many of which were not identified as to who the people were, and we were able to help Diane with some of that. Otherwise, all of us worked together. It took quite a while. I think we started somewhere in 2007, and the book didn't come out until 2020. So, of course, that includes a couple of years at the University of Utah Press, which did an excellent job in getting it formatted and getting it out. So that's sort of the story of all of us. And two of those individuals have passed away already. Actually, three, Vorsila Borer, passed away as well. So there aren't many of us left, and I suspect not a lot left out there either, especially from the early years, 1947 or so. I have a whole house full of not only the ones that I collected first, or purchased, I should say. Of course, Bert cautioned us there was no collecting of materials from any of the parks, including sherds or anything else. He was very insistent on that, but many of us fell in love with the Native American art of the region. So I think with my $20 that my parents had given me as spending money, I bought a small Navajo rug, a basket, and a San Ildefonso pot. And the second trip, I bought a nugget turquoise necklace. But I know several of the other girls, Marianne Stein and also Susan Martin, had good collections that they accumulated through the years. So introducing us to the art of the region, which is, of course, exceedingly vibrant and still attracts all of us, we did indeed collect. In fact, she knew the owners of trading posts that we visited, as well as the individuals in Pueblo communities. And toward the end of the trips of which I was on, she would send out information ahead of time as to whether we might be interested in materials. And then she would advise us as to, yes, this is a good purchase. No, wait a while. You'll find better quality materials. And she always looked at the quality to make sure that we were getting something that was very nice rather than just particularly tourist art. Although, of course, one could say that many of the materials developed as tourist art and then went way beyond that to the present day. In the second to the last chapter, the sort of summary chapter, I think we pulled together data on about 60 girls, especially those who attended Bertha's, either her memorial service or her 80th birthday. And we were able to track them down through cards that are in the archives and find them and see what became of them. And quite a number who didn't go into anthropology went into other fields. At least three that I know of got PhDs in history, including Joe Tice Bloom. And then Susan Martin became a biochemist and had a very successful career at that. Marianne Stein got her PhD in anthropology, but also a law degree in addition, and worked in Albuquerque as an environmental law person after she went out of anthropology and into law. Others did become nurses, but often master's degree level rather than just a BA level. And many went in or stayed with Girl Scouting because they had daughters or they knew of the value of the program in general as a building program for confidence among young women, and the idea that they could do what they want and be what they wanted and nobody should tell them, no, you can't because you're a woman. We traveled in a caravan of vehicles. We had one male with us at all times, and he was the car wrangler. The National Girl Scouts, of course, had liability and some medical insurance. Our parents would pay, I think it was $1.50 for a policy that would ensure our survival, basically. But I think the Museum of New Mexico didn't realize perhaps what the liability situation was fully in terms of them, because they didn't carry any specific or special policies. And I think today, given where we were going, how far we were going, how many of us there were, the state of the roads in those days in New Mexico, all the adventures we had climbing into and back out of different pueblos like Mesa Verde. We all climbed the ladders up into Balcony House, and even the Park Service has become a little bit jumpy about that and other such issues. And so I don't know. I think you maybe could do it on a small scale. I know the Boy Scouts, they did do some travel adventures, but not, I don't think, on the scale that we did. Bert always pre-scouted everything, so she knew exactly where the hospitals were, where the doctors were, all kinds of facilities. And we did have a certified first aid person with us the whole time. She introduced us pretty well to the desert. We stayed up above the Mogollon Rim. She not only told us about rattlesnakes, but also about Cholla cactus and how to get that off of us if we ever had the misfortune of running into one. Scorpions in our sleeping bags and anything else that might be hazardous. She was pretty thorough in her training. Also, we had a botanist with us most of the time who could identify the flora and fauna. That was also exceedingly useful. Bert also was trained in geology, so we got quite a bit of that in our travels in addition. We had several adventures in different camps. The Moorfield camp flooded one time, and our sleeping bags went floating down the ways. We had to retrieve them and dry them all out, but we were prepared. We also had a lot of fun in addition, but Bert was quite clear that it was meant to be an educational experience, not just a fun in the sun situation. But teenage girls being teenage girls, we had a lot of fun too and did a few things that Bert didn't know about. She was a lot of fun, but also very strict. We knew who was the boss. We did and saw a lot of things that those of us who went into anthropology and other fields related to the Southwest look back on with great pride. Some of the greats in Southwestern archaeology were enlisted to speak to the girls, and they did. We didn't know who they were necessarily at the time, but in retrospect, we certainly found out if we went anywhere near their fields.
Thanks for talking to us today, Kay.
You're most welcome.
This was a presentation of the Preservation Technology Podcast, produced by the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. To find more podcasts like this one, please visit our website,